So who will lead the Copenhagen conference?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It is the 10th day of the United Nations Climate Change Summit going on in Denmark. Marketplace reporters are there. This morning, our coverage continues with dramatic new developments. The president of the conference, Connie Hedegaard, has resigned. She's been in place, or replaced, I should say, by the Danish prime minister. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is in Copenhagen. He's with us live with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So why did she step down?
Well, officially, the Danish organizers are saying that this is a purely procedural move, practically a matter of protocol. They say it's more appropriate that the prime minister presides over the meeting now that all the world leaders are arriving, and that then releases Connie Hedegaard, who's an environment minister, to get down to running the negotiations directly. But Alessandra Vitelli, an expert with the IDEA Carbon Consultancy, says Connie Hedegaard's resignation is a bad sign.
Clearly, there's a serious problem, and she needs to be released from her ceremonial duties, if you like, to get on the ground and negotiate with the delegations and with the leaders.
Now, she hasn't stormed out, and it does make some sort of sense. She's an environment minister. She has a lot of the details of the negotiations in her head and could make a difference. But making this rather sudden, dramatic move on the eve of the final phase of the summit doesn't look too good.
Yeah. All right. Keep us updated. Stephen Beard in Copenhagen. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Be sure to check out Marketplace with Kai Rizdahl later today. We'll have more coverage from the UN summit on climate change from Denmark. Let's check numbers. European markets are up right now. Asian markets closed mixed today. The Nikkei up nearly a percent. The Hang Seng down nearly a percent. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow lost about 49 points to close at 10,452. Earlier this week, Citigroup said it would pay back government bailout money. But we heard from some analysts who said Citi may not be ready for that step, that it's still too fragile to let loose of so much money. Today's Washington Post reports the bank's getting a bailout of a different sort, billions in tax breaks. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
There's a rule in the tax code that allows a company to avoid taxes as a result of losses in prior years. Citigroup's loss tally is already $38 billion. The thing is, companies can't take advantage of the tax break if there's a change in ownership. That's so you can't just buy a flailing company and take advantage of tax breaks. Well, according to the Washington Post, the IRS exempted Citigroup from that part of the rule last Friday. So even though the government is about to sell a 34% stake in the bank, it won't be considered a change in ownership. Citi will get to keep its tax break. Perhaps a fair ruling, says banking analyst Bert Ely.
We have to be careful in rushing to judgment about this.
Ely says the government may benefit from the exemption. That's because the tax breaks may keep Citi's stock value from dropping. That would mean a better return when Uncle Sam sells his stake in the bank. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Federal Reserve wraps up its two-day meeting on interest rates later today. We're going to get the word on how the economy's faring. By the way, Time magazine says Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke is its person of the year. The magazine says he led an effort to help save the world economy. Yep, that'll do it.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Bank of America. 1 year into a 10-year, $1.5 trillion investment in low- to moderate-income communities. And is distributed by American Public Media. For information about underwriting this or other APM programs, such as Marketplace Money, visit AmericanPublicMedia.org.
European regulators today dropped their antitrust case against Microsoft. That's after the company agreed to offer customers a choice of rival web browsers. A big seller this holiday season is the mini laptop. The top brand for the so-called netbook isn't Hewlett-Packard or Dell. It's Acer from Taiwan. In fact, this past quarter, Acer became the world's second biggest PC seller, just behind HP. It's a high watermark for Taiwan's tech sector. But can it go on? From Taipei, here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
At a computer trade show in Taipei, Taiwan's computer makers flaunt their wares. And the leader of the pack is local brand Acer, king of the netbooks. Lawrence Lin is a company marketing executive.
So Acer, the netbook, it's like global.
The netbook plays a big role in Acer's passing Dell to become the world's second best-selling computer maker. Now we've introduced a 3D notebook and a touchscreen model.
Acer's top rival is also from Taiwan, ASUS invented the netbook in 2007. Taiwan has done well for a small island with the population of Maryland. And much of the credit goes to Acer founder Stan Shi.
Taiwanese brand name is more than 30 years.
Promoting Taiwanese brands around the world has taken 30 years, from the calculator to the computer, and now Acer has the potential to become number one worldwide.
Taiwan's recipe includes the original ingredient of cheap labor. Local firms started in the 80s by assembling PCs for foreign brands. Then, says political scientist Xu Su-Qian, they stirred in lots of engineers trained in the political and tech hub, America.
We were ally of the center of the world. We were spoiled. We were indeed spoiled.
Sprinkle in government-funded industrial parks, and you have the makings of an IT titan. But there is another titan next door. China has already sucked away factory assembly jobs. So Taiwan's challenge is to create service jobs, like designing computers and branding them. The risk is having good ideas stolen by China, where the mean joke is that R&D stands for receive and duplicate. Mark Foreman runs the Taiwan manufacturing firm Marlin & Sons.
That's like, I lend you my key, you open my door for me, you go ahead and make a copy, and then when you give me my key back, it doesn't really make a difference, does it? Because now you can open that door anytime you want.
Play China right, though, and the fastest growing market in the world equals opportunity. Skeptics will say Taiwanese companies skimp on the research and are novices at branding. But most here expect the big brands from this little island to retain their edge. In Taipei, Taiwan, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And finally, the pizza delivery business is down 6% this year. So in an effort to boost sales, Domino's Pizza says it's changing its recipe. New kind of crust, tangier sauce, even the style of cheese. In a consumer taste survey of pizza places, the firm Brand Key said Domino's came in last, tied with Chuck E. Cheese. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.